This year is brought to you by TorahWeb.org.
Thank you very much. There was a famous yeshiva in Volozhin, Prime Volozhin. I was a student of the Vilna Gaon. He was known as the most outstanding student of the Vilna Gaon. He felt very uncomfortable being called a student of Vilna Gaon and didn't give any classes. He didn't teach anywhere. The Vilna Gaon just sat and learned all the time. He was supported by the community. So what do you mean he was a student of the Vilna Gaon? He would come to Vilna. He lived in Volozhin. He'd come to Vilna twice a year and spend half an hour with the Vilna Gaon and have a whole list of shilas. So he felt very uncomfortable why they called him the most outstanding student of the Vilna Gaon. But that's what all the students of the Vilna Gaon were, was the same. So Rabbi Volozhin had founded the Volozhin Yeshiva. That was the first yeshiva in Lithuania. He founded it, I think, 1801 or something. Then it was closed by the Russian government in the late 1891 and something. It lasted 90 years. And towards the end of the years of the Volozhin Yeshiva, the government kept on pestering the Rabbonim and the Yeshiva. They have to introduce secular studies, and they can't leave the Beis Medrash open all day long. They have to lock the doors at night. The students have to have a chance to rest up. And no one understood what the government was bothering them about. What do they care? They won't be able, the yeshiva brach won't be able to make a living. What was the government worried the Jews? What do they care if the Jews will make a living or not? So no one understood what it's all about till the end of the late 1900s when communism collapsed. So they made public all of the secret files of the FBI, the NKVD, that they had there for years. And then they found out what it was, that they heard that there was tumbling in the yeshiva when they wanted to introduce Musar into the yeshiva. So some yeshivas accepted, spent a lot of time studying Musar, and others didn't. So in Volozhin, when there was an interest, there was a discussion about introducing Musar. So the students were rioting. And when the Rosh Yeshiva appointed his son, the Nitziv, Rabbi Berlin, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, was the Rosh Yeshiva for 39 years. It's very unusual to be the president of a university. The president of a yeshiva, president of the university, has to raise all the money. The Rosh Yeshiva has to raise all the funds. So someone should be the president of a yeshiva for fundraising purposes for 39 years is very unusual. So so the Netziv appointed one of his sons, Prime Berlin, as the Rosh Yeshiva, and the students were rioting. They were throwing shtenders, and when he would deliver the shiur, they were arguing with him in the middle, and they heard that there was, so when the Russian government heard that there was rioting in the yeshiva, they weren't rioting, they weren't rebelling against the government, they were rebelling against the Rosh Yeshiva, why he appointed his son. They were rebelling why they want to introduce Musa. There was, but they were afraid if they're rioting wildly about other things, they can riot against the government as well. So they want to close down the whole yeshiva. So that's what happened. In the end, it was closed down. So this, the Netziv, the Rosh Yeshiva, for the last 39 years in Volozhin, had two sons. The older son was Rav Chaim Berlin, and the younger son was Rabbi Bar Ilan. Very different. Rav Chaim Berlin did not belong to the Mizrahi at all, and Rabbi Bar Ilan was one of the leaders of the Mizrahi. They were very different. So Meir Berlin, Rav Chaim Berlin was the son of the Netziv from his first wife. The first wife passed away, and Rav Meir Bar Ilan was the son of the Netziv from the second wife. Different people, different style. So Rav Meir Bar Ilan wrote a book in Yiddish from Volozhin Biz Yerushalayim, and it's been translated into Hebrew and into English. It's interesting. And he writes that he had many relatives who were Rabbonim, and he spoke to all of them to ask them what do they think the role of the rabbi is. Whatever the role of the rabbi is, he has to fulfill his role in conjunction with his community, with the balabatim that he's working with. So the author of the Aruch HaShulchan was a relative of Rav Meir Bar Ilan. So he thought the role of the rabbi is to pass the shalos. when Rabbeinu Bar Ilan asked Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik married the granddaughter of the Netziv, so officially Rabbeinu Bar Ilan was his uncle. He was much younger. Rabbeinu Bar Ilan died after Hakamas HaMedina. He lived at Rav Chaim Soloveitchik there, died there in 1920 or something, like after the First World War, 1918 or something like that. But officially he was the Rameir Bar Ilan was the son of the Netziv and the second wife, so he was much younger than his nephew. So he asked Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, what does he think the role of the rabbi is? So he thought the role of the rabbi is to be in charge of all of the chesed in the community. Rav Chaim used to deal with the aniyim and the almanas and the yisaimim. And Shalom Bayis, Rav Moshe Feinstein on the Lower East Side, used to deal a lot also with the people on the Lower East Side about Shalom Bayis. When there was a rift in the marriage, so he dealt a lot with the Balabat. Rav Chaim felt that the role of the rabbi is to deal with the chesed, because he had a dayan in the city who passed in all the shal, had Reb Simcha Zelig Rieger. When we were students in Yeshiva, Dr. Rieger was a son of Reb Simcha Zelig, a son of the Dayan from Brisk. He used to teach Tanakh in MTA, as well as in Yeshiva College for many, many years. So Reb Simcha Zelig used to paskin all the shalas. So it wasn't Reb Chaim's job to paskin shalas, the Dayan took care of all that. So in Reb Chaim's community, he felt that his role was to be in charge of all of the chesed, to be in charge of all of the tzedakah. The Rambam points this out, that the mitzvah of tzedakah has to be fulfilled not only on an individual level, each individual person has to give tzedakah, it has to be organized, it has to be a community-wide campaign to raise money for tzedakah. So chayvus hatzibur, in addition to being a chayvus hayochid. So Rav Soloveitchik, every couple of years, the yeshiva has a chag ha-smicha. Every 3-4 years, they celebrate, a group of boys are getting smicha. So they celebrate. So for many years, officially, Dr. Belkin was the Rosh Yeshiva in the yeshiva. When Dr. Revel passed away, so there was a machloikis among the students who should be the Rosh Yeshiva. So Dr. Belkin used to read the boy Shiduchim, he used to give money to go out on the dates, and he used to work with them in the base medrash. Rav Soloveitchik used to go back to Boston, and he used to scream at the students and humiliate them if they wouldn't read the Gemara correctly, if they made a mistake, they mispronounced it, he would scream at them. So the students liked Dr. Belkin better than Rabbi Soloveitchik. So they appointed, officially, Dr. Belkin was the Rosh Yeshiva. So Dr. Belkin always spoke at the Chag HaSmicha. He would speak 10-15 minutes. He always had good toich and he always had good ideas, but he was not a good public speaker, not in Yiddish and not in English. And then after 15 minutes of speaking good ideas, he would give over the podium to Rabbi Soloveitchik, and every time Rabbi Soloveitchik would prepare a whole different drosha, an hour-long drosha. And every drosha was a charge to the rabbanim. So remember, one of the drushes was about this, that the rabbi has to make sure that he gives a lot of tzedakah also. He has to be in charge of all of the tzedakah in the community. And if the balabatim are going to see the rabbi isn't giving so much tzedakah, they're not going to be so excited about giving either. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the many different Talmid Chacham over the years, told their children, they left the tzavor, what they want to be inscribed on their matzeva. So Rav Chaim instructed his family, he wants them to write on it. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was a Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin for many years. And he made a whole revolution of learning, a whole different style of learning. He didn't want that to be written on his matzeh. He just wanted it should say Isha Chesed. He was very involved in Chesed. Now the matzeh doesn't say that because the matzeh was destroyed. And after the war, it was destroyed in the Second World War. And after the war, the people who put up the matzeva didn't know the Rav Chaim left instructions what he wants on the matzeva. So they wrote, the author of the Sefer on the Rambam and the Rosh Yeshiva Volozhin, they wrote different things. But the original matzeva said, Isha Chesed. Yet today, the Rabbanim, we don't have a dayan in every community, so the rabbi has to paskin shaylus also. The rabbi has to be reasonable when he paskins the shaylus. He can't give the community, not all the members of the community on the same level as the rabbi. It's not right. He should give them all the chumras in the world. He has to give them a reasonable psak. If he wants, he can be machmir for himself, but it's not right to impose all of his personal chumras. I remember Rabbi Soloveitchik used to speak at the Chag HaSmicha when he gave the charge to the young mismachim. I remember years ago when I was an MTA, so hardly anybody, there weren't so many mismachim. So every couple of years when they had the Chag HaSmicha, the whole input auditorium was empty. Hardly anybody came. Now they have so many more mismachim, there isn't even enough room for the spouses and the parents to come. They don't have enough room for the family. But when I was a student, when we were students at MTA, so they used to make us sit through, the high school student had to sit through the few hours of the Chag HaSmicha just to fill up the auditorium. I understood Yiddish, so I was very happy about it. And Rabbi Soloveitchik, every Chag HaSmicha gave a different rosh. So remember, he was speaking about the fact whenever there's a new discovery in physics or chemistry or biology or some one of the sciences, so they write it up in the newspapers and in the magazines and they popularize it. They try to explain to the public what's the new discovery. So he said the rabbis have the obligation to popularize the Torah. The rabbi shouldn't give a shiur above the heads. Some rabbis have the attitude and some yeshivas have the attitude that the highest level of a shiur is you give a shiur and after 5 minutes everybody's lost. Nobody can follow. That's ridiculous. Many of us will remember, Rabbi Soloveitchik used to give a Yortzeit shiur, a Yortzeit for his father, Gimel Shvat. So people would come from all over. They would fly in from out of town. They would come from out of town, drive in, fly in. And the streets in Washington Heights were swarming with people coming to the Yeshiva University. They would wish each other a Freilichen Yortzeit. Rabbi Soloveitchik had a Freilichen Yortzeit. And he would talk for 4 hours, 2 hours halacha and 2 hours agada. The 2 hours halacha, he would send out letters in advance, what topic he's going to cover, and a list of marmakaimas, what you should prepare. Then as the day came closer for the Yortzeit, they would hang up more marmakaimas in the old Beis Medrash, and people would grab a seat 10 o'clock in the morning. They want to make sure they have a good seat. The Lampert Auditorium is gigantic. They want to get a good seat, so they would sit there the whole day long to make sure they get a good seat. And he would review the Gemara. He would ask a short list of kashas on the Gemara, why it doesn't make sense. And he would explain the kashas so well, you would think no one in the world can answer these questions. It's impossible. And then he would introduce another Gemara. Everything was all in the Maram Kamas. He would quote another Gemara. From the other Gemara, you see a certain idea. And based on that idea, all the kashas disappeared. That was the style that was the Yortzeit shiur. That wasn't the regular shiur, it was not like that. The regular shiur, he learned the Gemara. But the Yortzeit shiur, that was the start. And the people sat glued to their chairs for 4 hours. And after the 2 hours of halacha explaining the din in the Gemara, then he would give a drasha for 2 hours, hashkafa based on the halacha. It's famous that Rabbi Cook, the first chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Cook, many svarim, many essays. Say one of the essays, he says, when you're trying to establish the hashkafa of Judaism, you shouldn't base it on Agadita, because we don't really have a strong tradition how to interpret Agadita in the Gemara. You should base hashkafa on halacha. Halacha, we know what the din is. So if you have a din, you can figure out based on the din what the hashkafa is. So the people from Merkaz Harav, that was Rav Cook's yeshiva, they say, the one who did that was not so much Rav Cook, didn't do that so much. His hashkafa is really based on Agadita. They say the one who did it really was Rabbi Soloveitchik, because he would give a shiur for 2 hours on halacha and the Yortzeit shiur. Then he would give a drasha for 2 hours based, explaining the hashkafa based on the halacha. So that's what Rabbi Soloveitchik said, that it's the responsibility of the rabbis to explain the Gemara. They shouldn't oversimplify the Gemara. They shouldn't oversimplify the Gemara. They should explain to the public what the topic is all about and try to explain to the best of their ability what insights in the Gemara, just like they write in the newspapers, what's the latest news in chemistry and physics and biology. So the Rabbanim should be able to present a good picture of what the Gemara is all about. the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, some people, many people make a mistake. They think when people are students and you're studying, so there's an obligation to study Torah. But after you already finish elementary school and high school and college and graduate school, so you're not a student anymore, so you're not obligated to study anymore. So the Rambam said that it's not true. Every Jewish man has an obligation to learn Torah, whether he's healthy or sick, whether he's young or old, whether he's wealthy or poor. You have an obligation to learn Torah till the day that you die. Many people think, yeah, a person has to learn Torah. If he's a rabbi or he's a rebbe in a yeshiva, he has to learn Torah. But if he's a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, an Indian chief, whatever he does for a living, well, he has to learn Torah after he's no longer a student. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said it's not true. It's certainly not true. I personally know many doctors and lawyers who are bigger Talmid HaChacham than the rebbes in yeshiva, but they just don't have the personality to be a rebbe in a yeshiva. But the obligation to learn applies to every Jewish person who's able to understand. We all have an obligation to learn. So the rabbi has to see to it, to if the balabatim will let him do it, he has to see to it to organize various shiurim in the community. The rabbi cannot possibly give all of the shiurim himself, but he should, some of them he has to give himself. And you have other people who learned in yeshivas. It's beautiful if you have a doctor or a lawyer or a businessman giving a weekly shiur. That's marvelous. So the rabbi has to organize. There should be a shiur in halacha, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. What's wrong? I remember once there used to be a Moshe Dimantman, used to be a rebbe in Kerem Yavne many years ago. In the end of his life, he retired from Kerem Yavne and he lived in Rehovot, and he used to have a kollel for people who learned in Merkaz Harav and other yeshivas and they never heard yeshiva Shetorah. So he would have a kollel to prepare them to learn Aben Ezra and Choshe Mishpat, to learn Dayonis for the Rabbanut. So whenever I would be, every so often, I would be in Rehovot visiting my daughter, my children who live there. So if he would know that I'm there, he would ask me to give a shiur in his kollel. So one day he asked me to give a shiur, but he said I have to finish by 12:30 in the morning because someone's making a siyum. So I finished by 12:30. I see the table was set with cake and soda. What he made a siyum on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. What was that all about? He was a descendant of Rav Shlomo Gansri, the one who wrote the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And he had learned the Merkaz Harav for, I think the program is a 7-year program, something like that. And he asked Rabbi Avram Shapiro, who was the Rosh Yeshiva Merkaz Harav for many years, no one does anything on the yard site of Rav Shlomo Gansri. What does he think he should do? In memory of his great grandfather. So he said, make us see him every year on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So he would go through the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So after I gave my shiur, we all sat down by the table. He read the last two sifim in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He said, Kaddish the Rabbanan. And they had a sium on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch used to be one of the best sellers. I think it even sold more copies than the Chumash. There was a period of time, I think, that it sold more copies than it was translated in different languages. People have to know the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the basics. After you graduate the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, they can move on to something bigger and better. But I don't think it's a smart idea to start with the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah is very complicated, and people who don't know the Gemaras will misunderstand the Mishnah Berurah. So we should organize in every shul. We should organize a group that should learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. They should make a siyum whenever they finish. Why not make a party when you finish learning the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? You have to organize learning Nevi'im Uksuvim. You have to organize a shiur for Parshas HaShavua. I was very impressed. There's a certain shul in Far Rockaway where every single week there's a businessman who davens in the shul. He learned in yeshiva. He was a student of my class. He gives a shiur in Parshas HaShavua every Shabbos morning. He prepares. He prepares and gives a shiur. The rabbi has to give a shiur also. You have to have some of the shuls here in Tinek have a shiur in Minchas Chinuch. There's a hashkafa minyan on Shabbos morning. When I was growing up, the hashkafa minyan on Shabbos morning was for the balabatim how to go to work. They used to daven the hashkafa minyan, make kiddush, and go to work. They thought, I remember there's one balabas, I only saw him on Yontif. He never came to shul on Shabbos. I don't know, but I used to go to school with his son. My sister went to Central with his daughter. They both moved to Herzl, the son and the daughter. Very religious, and the father was never there. He was only there on Yom Tov. He used to get an aliyah. He made a mishaberach for the Gera Rebbe. And once he shows up on a Shabbos, he gets an aliyah, makes him shiberch for the Gerer Rebbe again. He says, Babush, and now that he's giving Kiddush, because he just switched his job, and now he'll be able to be a Shem Shabbos. They used to, the Hashkama Minyan was for the people who felt they have to go to work on Shabbos morning. But now the Hashkama Minyan is for the people who don't want to listen to the rabbi's sermon. And they claim they want to sit and learn. Okay. So one of the shuls in Tinek has Hashkama Minyan, and then they have one of the Balabatim gives a shir, Minchas Chinuch, every Shabbos. That's beautiful. They alternate, I think. Every week someone else gives a shir, Minchas Chinuch. That's marvelous. The rabbi should organize different shurim in Novi. Somehow it turned out as if you don't learn Gemara, you're not learning. That's not true. When you learn Chumash, it's also learning. When you learn the Nevi'im Uksuvim, it's also learning. Nothing wrong with learning the Nevi'im Uksuvim. The Orthodox Jews ran away from it because the Apikursim were giving in Europe. The Apikursim were giving new interpretations in the Nevi'im Uksuvim, not in accordance with the tradition of the Gemara. So that's why the religious Jews ran away. But the more correct is, we're supposed to learn Tanakh. Tanakh is the source of all of Hashkofen. The rabbi has to organize all of these shiurim and supervise them. It's a beautiful idea that the rabbi should see to it that every child who becomes a bar mitzvah should prepare a Dvar Torah. We should train the children at a young age to say a Dvar Torah. There's a fellow here in Tinek from the other part of the city who's already retired. He's over 70. He's already retired. He was brought up in Manhattan, and the rabbi in his shul was Rabbaron Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik's a younger brother. And when this young man became bar mitzvah, Rabbaron Soloveitchik wrote the Dvar Torah for him, and he spent an hour, three Shabbosim in a row, teaching him all the Gemaras that were relevant to his Dvar Torah. And now he cherishes that tremendously. He learned with Rabbaron Soloveitchik 3 weeks in a row. He learned on Shabbos, and he said a Dvar Torah at his bar mitzvah. So that's a beautiful idea. In other communities, the rabbi picks a mitzvah that appears in the parsha, and the bar mitzvah bochur says a Dvar Torah on that. Then when the boys become a little older, so the rabbi should encourage them that college age, he should encourage them, they should give a shiur in public on Yom Tovim. Why not? They should prepare and make sure that he's not making mistakes. They should make sure that they prepare, rabbi should see to it that the young man should prepare the Dvar Torah. Many of those people who were preparing as young children to say Dvar Torah on Yom Tovim later on became rabbeim in yeshivas. Years ago, a rabbi in yeshiva wouldn't make a living. It's a different world now. The rabbeim and yeshivas make a decent living. They're not going to be rich, but they'll make a decent living. The rabbi has to learn when the rabbi comes to the community, one of the things he has to do is check the Erev. Shouldn't be lying on someone else. He has the obligation to check the Erev. It's interesting, when the Chasam Sofer was appointed the rabbi in Pressburg, so he checked the Erev, and he wasn't happy about a certain part, a certain pole in the Erev. So he asked the Balabatim, who approved this? So he said, the previous rabbi, Reb Meshulam Igra. So he said, and it's true, as he writes, Reb Meshulam Igra, kedai hu lismacholam afilu shaloi b'shas atrak. You can always rely on Reb Meshulam Igra. But it's known that years later, he changed the Erev. So the Chazon Ish writes, he doesn't understand what happened over here. When the Chasam Sofer saw the Erev, he thought it's no good. Then he said, who made the Erev like this, who approved it? He said, the previous rabbi. He said, good, you can rely on him. So he changed his mind. He thought that it is good, because the previous rabbi said it's good. Then we know historically he changed it later. I remember he used to be a professor in YU who taught Jewish history. He lived down the block from me on Bennett Avenue, I forgot his name. He was brought up in Pittsburgh. So he told me he remembers as a child they would all point to a certain pole in the Erev. He said, this is the pole. He wasn't, the Chasam Sofer died in the middle 1800s. So they said, this is the pole that the Chasam Sofer changed. He didn't know what the change was. He didn't know what the whole issue was. In the Jewish, the Chasam Sofer explains what it was. But we know that he did change it. So the Chazon Ish writes, what happened over here? Originally he thought it's no good. Then he changed his mind. He thought that it is good. Then he changed his mind again. He thought that it's no good. The Gemara says, sometimes, Ein on a moment al dvar halacha kein nichshel b'tchila. A person only ascertains what the din is. A rabbi will, if he made a mistake, and then he has to admit in public that he made a mistake, he's going to research the topic very well. So that shows responsibility. If a Talmid Chacham made a mistake in a psak, and then he publicizes, Dvarim Shamaati Bifneichem Torah Sein Biyadei, I made a mistake, that's intellectual honesty. But then he backs out a second time. That's irresponsibility. That's not intellectual honesty. He keeps on changing his mind every year, back and forth, like a yo-yo. That's not right. So what happened over here? So the pashtus is that the story was that Chassam Sofer didn't like the Erev from the beginning to the end. He never thought it was good. But he thought he has to change it before Shabbos. So then he asked, who made the Erev like this? And he told him the previous Erev, Meshulam Igros. So he said, Kidaihu this Mecholav, the Balabatim can rely on it. Whenever there's a Machloikas in Erevin, if there's a legitimate opinion in the Hokel, you have a right to rely on it. He did not carry. The Chassam Sofer did not carry in the Erev. And he told his wife and his children they should not carry. He personally held it was no good from the beginning to the end. But he's not Mechiv to change it before Shabbos. Balabatim can rely on the previous rabbi, but after a few years, it's going to be forgotten that the previous rabbi made it. It was going to be known as the Chassam Sofer's Erev. So after a while, he had to change it because it's going to become known as his Erev, and he held that it's no good. The din is that you have a right to go Lekula, but if I'm convinced that it's wrong, I have no right to go Lekula. But for the Balabatim, I'm not mechuyev to make them crazy. You know, I have to change it right away. So he changed it later. So the rabbi should learn Erevin. Rabbi should learn Erevin. Used to be Grunemann's Bakery. Many of you remember Washington Heights. The old Mr. Grunemann told me that when Rabbi Hirsch passed away and his son-in-law came, Rabbi Shlomo Breuer came. Shlomo Breuer was a Hungarian and he was the son-in-law of Rabbi Hirsch. He came to Frankfurt to take over the rabbinical position of Rabbi Samson and Eiffel Hirsch. So at that time, Rabbi Hirsch had the breakaway minyan. And the big Orthodox shul just completed the Erev at that time. So Rabbi Shlomo Breuer said, the Erev is no good. So he asked him, why is the Erev no good? He said, I'll give shiurim in the yeshiva, and I'll explain why the Erev is no good. So this Mr. Wooly Grinnebaum, I used to sit next to him in shul. He used to talk to me all the time. So when you're allowed to. So he said, instead of learning Bava Kamma and Gittin and Ksubas and the normal things, they learned Erevin for 3 years. He remembers Tosis has diagrams. In Erevin, Tosis has diagrams, what the streets look like, whether it's good or it's not good. He says, after 3 years, we still didn't know what was wrong with the Erev. But Shlomo Roy said it was no good, so they took his word for it. Yeah. So the rabbi has to check the Erev. And he should explain to the Talmidim, explain to the Balabatim what the Erev is all about. They should know on their own whether the Erev is acceptable or not. A lot of times you live in a community with the Erev, you have so many Rabbonim here in Tinek, the Erev is, each rabbi checks the Erev. But then you go to, there's a Shevet Baruch Hashem, there is a Bar Mitzvah in another community, there's an Erev there. Not every Erev is on the same level of acceptability. It could be that your Erev is much better than the other Erev. Even if you're in the practice of relying on the Erev here in Tinek, it doesn't mean that the Erev in some other community is as good as the Erev here. You should ask your rabbi whether you can rely on the Erev in the other community as well. We live in a generation that it's important for the rabbi to give a shiur for the women. Not that you should give a shiur for the women in Gemara. The men, a lot of times, don't need a shiur in Gemara. I teach officially, yeshiva pays me a salary to teach Gemara. I use Gemara as a pretext. I use Gemara to teach Chumash. The whole Gemara is based on Chumash. I teach Ashkafe, I teach Jewish history based on Gemara. You have to give a lot of background. The women don't really need Gemara. The men are not up to Gemara either a lot of times. The women need, you have to explain to them the dinim of Hadlokas HaNeris. It's not so poshut. I was brought up in Pennsylvania. And we lived for a while in Philadelphia, and the day school in Philadelphia was co-ed. I went to Beth Jacob. My wife joked, she's so frum, she married a boy who went to Beth Yankov. So I went to Beth Jacob, it was co-ed, but only went to the fifth grade. There was no sixth grade. So whoever wanted more Torah for their children said I had to send them to Baltimore. So I have There's a prominent rabbi in Florida, Rabbi Yochanan Zweig. He was a classmate of mine in Philadelphia. His family lived in Philadelphia. So my parents sent me to New York. I was brought up for a while by my grandparents who lived in New York, and I went to yeshiva in New York. So when my grandparents were very poor people. So when my grandmother would bench licht on Erev Shabbos, the room was dark, the whole house was dark. They couldn't afford to leave on lights for the whole Shabbos. So she only left on a little electric bulb in the bathroom, in case someone has to go to the bathroom. And then in the kitchen, she bench licht and we ate in the kitchen. And in the daytime, when you wanted to read, you wanted to learn to read, my grandmother was always learning Tzenev Arena. I was learning Chumash. And I was always making fun of her with her Galatiana Yiddish. And I didn't enjoy the way she cooked. I was always complaining. So my father had to always bail me out. Every couple of weeks, my father had to come take me back to Philadelphia. So I missed class on Friday and on Sunday. But I enjoyed my mother's food. I didn't enjoy my grandmother's food. So when my grandmother, I would always make fun of my grandmother. I was a miserable son, grandson. So my grandmother said she knows everything that I think I know in Rashi. She knows it from the Tzenev Arana. She did. She knew everything in the Tzenev Arana. So when she would light the candles in the kitchen, it was dark in the room. And when she lit the candles, she illuminated the room. Now, usually the lights are on. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, if the lights are on, you can't bench licht, you can't see a bracha on hadlokas haneris. The whole room is flooded with lights. If you have a chandelier, that room is flooded with lights. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, quoting from Taisus and Perek Bama Madlikin, you have to turn out all the lights, then you light the candles, then you turn on the electric lights, then you say the bracha on everything. The bracha goes on the candles and on the electric bulbs. Most of the women don't know that. Most of the Rabbanim don't know that. But that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You have to turn out the lights. So the Rabbanim have to give a shiur on Hadlokas Sanderis and Hilchas Afrosh Eschala. The women don't know the dinim of Afrosh Eschala. They're not ready yet for Gemara. The husbands are not ready for Gemara either. The wives are not ready. A lot of shuls, the women just want to show that they're just as good as the men, so they want to have a shiur in Gemara. The men don't need the shiur in Gemara either. If anyone should clamor, the women had a better curriculum in Europe. The women who went to gymnasium had a better curriculum in Limudei Kodesh than the men did. They studied the Kuzari a little bit. They knew Nevi'im Uksuvim. They knew Hebrew. My mother-in-law knew how to write Hebrew poetry. She composed Hebrew poetry based on her studies in gymnasium. Instead of the women clamoring that they want the same curriculum of the men to learn Gemara, the men should clamor they want the same curriculum as the women. The women's curriculum was better. They studied the Shemana Prokhim La'aram. The men don't even know what the Shemana Prokhim are. The Hakdomus Arambam, the Pirkei Avos, Pirshei Mishnah, it's called Shemana Prokhim La'aram. Kuzari. The boys in the Shiva never saw Kuzari. And the women's school, they do learn it. So the rabbi has to introduce a shiur for the women if the Balabatim will let him. But it should be a shiur that should be cheerful. All the shiurim have to be cheerful. The Gemara has an expression, Hadvarim Smechem Kenisinosam Misinai. When you learn Torah, if it's presented properly, it's cheerful. The din is that on Tisha B'Av, one is not allowed to learn Torah, one is in Shiva, in Avelis, Rachmana Litzlan. So you're not allowed to learn Torah because Bikudi Hashem Mishorim Misam Chelev. Torah is supposed to be very cheerful. So the rabbi has to present the halacha in a cheerful fashion. It shouldn't be boring. It shouldn't be above their heads that everyone should get lost after 5 minutes. That's ridiculous. The rabbi has an obligation to revisit all of the minhagim that the shul has. A lot of shuls have kooky minhagim. So each, when you appoint a new rabbi, the rabbi has to, it's called, it has to be minig vasikin. Remember, one of the boys, Rabbi Soloveitcher, used to ask the students to read. So he would always correct them if they would mispronounce a word. So the Shachan Yeredeh, one place, he says something about minig vasikin. Minig of Chassidim Tzadikim Anshe Maisa. So the boy read Minig Vatican. So they said, so what are you talking about? Minig Vatican. So Shachar Gan called Minig Vatican. Minig Vasik. A Minig has to be a Minig Vasik. Has to be a Minig that's approved by the Rabbanim. And even if the previous Rabbanim approved it, maybe the new rabbi does not approve it. So the rabbi has to review all of the Minhagim. And if he doesn't approve, he should insist they should not follow those Minhagim. They told me that in one shul there's a minhag that one who is an avelis during Yud Beis Chodesh never gets an aliyah the whole year. In Shulchan Aruch, they have people misread the Shulchan Aruch. It says that one who's an avelis should always get maftir, because different explanations why. Either because maftir have many more brachas, so it'll be a bigger schus for the niftar, or because Neman Hashem Alkenem Nemanim Devarecho is like a tzidik adin. I accept whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me. Like he spoke before, we think it's l'rom, really it's l'toifa. So Neman is like a tzidik adin. So the Poshe Pshat in the Ramah is, whenever it's his turn to get an aliyah, the Gabbai, instead of giving him Shlishi or Chamishi or whatever, he should give him after, but not. So some misunderstood the Ramon Shulchan Aruch. They thought the one is an Abelit Yid Beis Chodesh has to hop from one shul to the other to the other. Every week has to get mafter. That's not what it means. He should go mafter every single week. It means when it's his turn to get an aliyah, once a month or whatever, depending how many people come to shul. Instead of giving him some other aliyah, they should give him mafter. So there are different minhagim. There are minhagim. Every minig has a good reason, but it can still be considered a minig shtus. There's a Tosfos on the first daf in Bava Basra, on the first Mishnah, Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Tosfos quotes Rabbeinu Tam, that from the first Mishnah of Bava Basra you see that even if there's a minig that's established, sometimes it's a minig shtus. A minig shtus does mean that it doesn't have a good reason. A lot of minhagim have a very good reason. It's still a minig shtus. It's not a fulfillment of any din. Has to be a kiyum of something or another. So the rabbi has to reinvestigate all the minhagim of the community to make sure that they're correct. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that in Brisk, the Chotzer Beis HaKnesses was bare. There were no trees. And it looked empty, it looked naked, it looked terrible. So every time they had a new rabbi, they would ask him, are we allowed to plant trees in the Chotzer Beis HaKnesses? And rabbi after rabbi, they all said no, because Rabbi Akiva Eger, on the side of his Shulchan Aruch, he wrote down the Hilchas Beis HaKnesses to look on a certain sefer. Rav Yosef Karo wrote a commentary on the Rambam, that's called the Kesef Mishnah. It's printed on the side of the page. So the Kesef Mishnah, he always gives you all of the sources for every line that the Rambam says. This is a Mishnah, this is a Tosefta, this is a Yerushalmi, this is a Tshuvas HaGaonim, and I think 99 times the Rama has an expression, Yeroyali. He writes something original. I think the din is like this. By computer, they counted it 99 times. Says Yeroyali. So the Kesef Mishnah always gives you all the marmakam. So someone who didn't have a Kesef Mishnah wrote Rabbi David Aramo, that's his name. I was once in Meir Shorim, so I saw they were selling the sefer for $1. So I bought it for $1. So then I saw the sefer is useless because he didn't have a Kesef Mishnah, and he just gives marmakams, he gives sources for the Rambam, 10% of the Rambam. What about the other 90%? It's not a valuable sefer at all. But this sefer, Abdavar Arama, every 10 pages he writes some original psak. So Rabbi Akiva Eger on the side of the Shulchan Aruch tells you to look in that sefer with respect to this, that just like there's a din in Chumash, that you're not allowed to plant any trees in the Azara, in the Beis HaMikdash. So too, in the area, in the yard in front of the shul, you're not allowed to plant any trees. Sure. So because Rabbi Kevega didn't say, I think that's the din. He says, look in that book. That's what it says in that book. It doesn't mean that we paskin like that. So when they asked the Rabbanim normally, you plant all the trees and then you build the shul later on. But if you built the shul first, then the question is, are you allowed to plant trees? So rabbi after rabbi, every time they had a new rabbi in Brisk, they would ask him, are you allowed to plant trees? They said, no. Whereas Rabbi Kivega tells you, look in Rabbi Dovid Armo's commentary on the Rambam, not allowed to plant trees. Then when they appointed Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik as the rabbi in Brisk, so he gave them permission. He said, the shul was a wooden shul. The pews were wooden. The Aron Kodesh, everything is wooden. The din you're not allowed to make, you're not allowed to plant a tree, means you're not allowed to have any wooden building in the Beis HaMikdash. All of our shuls are wooden in Europe. All the shuls were wooden. They didn't have bricks. So he quoted Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, he married the granddaughter of the Netziv. So the Netziv has a collection of tshuvas, Meshiv Dover. So the Netziv writes like that. The din doesn't apply to Beis HaKnesses the shuls are all made from wood, so you can't say that the din applies. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik permitted them to. Rav Soloveitchik said it was the common practice. When a new rabbi was appointed in the community, he wanted to show that he knows how to learn, so he would always change something in the text of the Shtar Mechiras Chametz. When you sell the chametz to the goy. So some rabbis would add on that they're selling the pots and the chametz to get pots and pans. Others say, no, if you sell the pots and pans to the nochri, then when you buy it back after Pesach, then you have to be toivel all the pots and pans all over again, because you got it from a goy. So you only sell the chametz that's stuck on the side of the pans. We don't have any chametz stuck on the side of the pans, but not every pot can be cleaned out, not every balabasta knows how to wash out the pots well. And some of the balabastas have spaghetti stuck on the bottom of the spaghetti pot, so you have chametz in the pot. So some of the rabbis would sell the pots, other rabbis would sell the chametz that's stuck on the pots. So that was one of the things, that was Yodua in Europe. When they appoint a new rabbi, the rabbi would change something like an Eretz Yisrael every 7th year when it comes to Shemitah. So they sell the whole country to a non-Jew. So every 7th year, the Rabbanut adds on something new in the Shtar Mechira, when they sell. Every year, every 7th year, they come up with some new Chumrah. Okay. So they said that was common in Europe, that the Rabbanim, when they would be appointed to a new community, they would change something in the Shtar Mechira's Chumrah. The rabbi has a big job to do. And he has to have to work with the balabatim. The story is told. It's in folklore, but it probably did happen. That the rabbi came. He was a candidate for a rabbinical position, and he wanted to know what should he speak about on Shabbos. What did he need? I remember once I was a guest in a certain community in the Five Towns for a Shabbos Parshas Noach. So I asked the students on Thursday, I told the students, I'm going to be in this and this community. What area do they need Musa? So one of the boys in the class says right away, Amir Lenochri. They all have Goyishan maids, and all the Goyishan maids do all the malachas in front of everybody. So I spoke about Amir Lenochri. It fit into Parshas Noach. Okay, happened to fit in. So the story is told that a rabbi came. He was a candidate for a rabbinical position, so he asked one of the balabatim, what's a good topic to talk about? He told him, don't talk about Shabbos, don't talk about kashrus, don't talk about taras ha-mishpacha, the people don't observe. What should he talk about? Yiddishkeit. It's famous. Talk about Yiddishkeit. What do you mean Yiddishkeit? That's what Yiddishkeit is. Shabbos and kashrus, taras ha-mishpacha. I remember years ago there was a scandalous incident. There was a fellow who went to Yeshiva College. He went to high school and college, and he went into business, and he cheated in business on everybody. He cheated on Jews, and cheated on them, and cheated in business on everybody. And when they confront him, when the government arrested him, and they penalized him, so they said, how come you violated in business? He said, he never heard the Rabbeim say you're not allowed to cheat in business. The Rabbeim have to say, apparently the Rabbeim have to say, you're not allowed to cheat in business. At least once a year, the rabbi, at tax season, the rabbi should hold the drasha, you're not allowed to cheat on taxes. And at least once a year, maybe more than once a year, he should say in the drasha about not allowed to cheat in business. And every so often, we have to talk about the mitzvah of aliyah, the mitzvah to live there. On the books, there is a mitzvah we're all doing wrong. We live in Chutzalar. We're all supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael. Whoever can has the ability to move to Eretz Yisrael and make a decent parnasa there. If you move to Eretz Yisrael and you live in poverty, you live on charity, so that's not a mitzvah. But if you can move to Eretz Yisrael and have a half-decent living there, then there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. So the mitzvah of Aliyah, the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, is just as important as the other 612 mitzvahs. They should get equal time. So the rabbi has to speak about all these different things. He has to speak about, to encourage the students that after high school, they should continue learning. They shouldn't go to a secular college. We have students who spent 3 years in Eretz Yisrael and there are high-level yeshivas and lower-level yeshivas. There are students who spent 3 years in Eretz Yisrael learning in high-level yeshivas, and they come back to America. They go to a secular college, and they marry the non-Jewish girl who sat next to them in school. After 3 years of learning in Eretz Yisrael on a high level, then they marry a nochris without converting them. If they converted, it's a joke, it's a farce. The conversion is nishkin conversion. But so we have a lot to talk about. The rabbis have to talk about a lot of things. The rabbis have to become closer to the Talmidim, to their children, in order to have an influence on them. So they should try to work with them before they become bar mitzvah, and when they're in college, they should try to have them prepare the Rei Torah for the Yavim Tovim, and so on. The rabbi has a big program in every shul. My father-in-law, Zechana Levracha, learned in Europe in the Miri Yeshiva, and he came from the city Pinsk. So when he came back after Pesach, he came back to the yeshiva. So the mashgiach in the yeshiva, Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, asked him, did he have a chance to talk to the rabbi in Pinsk? The big Talmud Chacham was the rabbi. So he asked him, did you have a chance to talk to the rabbi in learning during Pesach? He says, no. He says, you didn't. The rabbi waits all year long to talk to the boys in learning. He made him go back home and spend a week. He told him, you come to the yeshiva a week later. Spend a week and talk and learning with the rabbi. The rabbi is, you're fortunate you have a rabbi who teaches in the yeshiva, so he doesn't need to talk and learning with the Talmidim. He talks and learning every day with the Talmidim in the yeshiva. But in Europe, that was one of the issues. There are a lot of minhagim that you have to revisit. Rabbi David Feinstein was the consultant for Art Scroll. The people who did the work on Art Scroll, they were Talmidim of Rabbi David Feinstein. So they say that they consulted him at everything. He didn't want his name. They mentioned his name once in a long while, but he was consulted on everything. So it's a common practice in many shuls that on Friday night after Ma'ariv is over, they sing Yigdal. You look in the Shulchan Aruch, they're opposed to reciting Yigdal, period. I'm not sure exactly why, but they're opposed to recitation of Yigdal. So if you look in the Art Scroll, they changed it. They put Adon Olam. But nobody says Adon Olam. They still keep on saying Yigdal. My impression is that Rabbi David Feinstein must have told them, just change it, and the people will go along. But they didn't, even in Yeshiva, they didn't change it yet. Even Wayu, they didn't change it. Rabbi Salvation was also opposed. He gave all explanation why he was opposed. The rabbi has an obligation to review all of the minhagim and to determine which are the minhagim that are acceptable, which not. In the yeshiva, when I was a student, years ago, they had people who had a chazokah to daven shachris, to daven musaf, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And then when the rabbanim were davening in that minyan, the paltikeya was Rabbi Tendler, Zechon Lebracha, he was a knockout paltikeya. And the different people who were davening shacharis and musaf, some of them were from Broya, some other community, they didn't follow the minhagim of the yeshiva. We have minhagim in the yeshiva. So they used to have a bal tefillah who always used to say Shira Malas. Shira Malas, in between the Ishtabach and Bochum, that's Minig Arizal. And the Sfardim have that minig. The Ashkenazim don't have that. And Shulchan Aruch it says that the Ashkenazim consider that a hefsek. He shouldn't say Shira Malas. But Moshe Feinstein felt bad. He wanted to say Shira Malas, so he changed it. He had them say Shira Malas after Chazaras HaShatz. After Shacharis is over, after Chazaras HaShatz. Rabbi Soloveitchik also took out, he said, it's in Shulchan Aruch. Not supposed to say Shira Malas. So we had, for years, we had Baal HaTfila. They said, they have the Chazakah, they're the Balabatim, they have the right to say whatever Tfila they want. They never listened to the Rabbi. And then over the years, these people passed away already. That was 70 years ago, and I was a student in Yeshiva. Now we have new people who have the chazaka, and they claim they have the chazaka. They have the right to do whatever they darn please, and they don't listen to what the rabbis say either. That's not right. The rabbi should review all of the minhagim and say what the meaning of this community should be. They have to determine. The rabbi has to review. The previous rabbi in any given community was all proper. Also, Talmud Chacham. But each rabbi has to paskin, or each rabbi has to approve of the minhagim according to his opinion. We should all be blessed with the Shana Tova, Ksirah Sima Tova, and you should have nachas from your new rabbi, and you should work along with the rabbi to enable him to do whatever he wants to introduce to even if the community is A+, you can have A++. A good yard.